Welcome to the Casual Author Podcast. I'm Dan, sci-fi and fantasy author, father of six, full-time worker, homesteader, as well as a man of many other responsibilities. I'm here to bring you inspiration and positivity around having a busy life and wanting to chase that author career, even if you have to take a casual approach. For more information about me, my books, and the podcast, head to dankenner.com/podcast. And here's the show. Hey, there is Dan Kenner with episode number 109 of the podcast. Today, we're talking to Brady Hunsaker about pulling your reader into the world. Talk a lot about his world in his trilogy that he's written and published, and we talk a little bit about how he goes about world building effectively and not too much. I know world building is a really big topic, particularly for fantasy and sci-fi authors like myself, so I think you'll really enjoy that conversation. He has some really interesting perspective from his experience, as well as some things that he's learned from his readings and research, so stick around for that conversation. Oh, I failed to mention that today is March 4th, 2024. For those of you who are listening in the future, that gives you a little bit of context on timing. So in this past week, I've been able to get back into the writing scheme, which has been excellent. I did finish the short story. I don't really have a name for it quite yet. But I finished the short story that I will be turning into Writers of the Future at the end of this quarter. I think I've given myself enough time to actually do some adequate edits. The last two times, I didn't really do any edits on it, which, you know, I'd not recommend it, highly not recommended. But, you know, I needed to get them in. I did a little bit of a read-through, put it through ProWriting Aid very briefly. But this time I'm giving my editors, namely my wife and some beta readers, some time to read through it and edit it. So that is very good. I'm really happy with how it turned out. It's a little bit different than I expected. It's more of an urban fantasy, which I've never really tried my hand at, to be completely honest with you. And, you know, it has some, not necessarily religious, but it has some like light and dark themes, moral themes from like a religious standpoint. So very interesting perspective on that. And, you know, that's something that eventually it will either give away free or maybe I'll package it up. I'm considering taking all of the short stories that I'm writing for Writers of the Future, packaging them up in like a short stories collection of myself. Honestly, all it would take is 5 or 6 of them, and then I'll have like nearly 100,000 word novel. So, because I write kind of large short stories, but that's probably what's going to happen more than likely after, you know, maybe the next 3 quarters, I'll have 6 short stories. Might as well just commission some art for each of them, put them into one book and call it good. Maybe I'll do a Kickstarter for it. I'm not sure what I'll do, honestly, but I'm enjoying the process of writing them. So I think that's the most important. Let's see. Other than that, in terms of writing, nothing much is going on other than I'm now revisiting Dwarf Blooded, which is the third book of the Hidden Heritage book. This is the YA Portal Fantasy series. First two books are done. First one is even edited by a line editor, but moving on to the third book and really enjoying where I'm going with this so far. It's great to get back into that. I didn't hate editing my time editing my short story as much as I thought I would, which is good. That's good news because normally I never want to edit. I put it off as long as possible, which is why I have multiple completed novels that still need to be edited because I'm putting it off. In any case, that is very good news. The fact that it wasn't so bad and I didn't hate it so bad. Let's see. Other than that, no real big updates for the authoring. In terms of homesteading, we finally got winter. It's March 4th, and we finally got winter here in Idaho. We had, I mean, I don't know for sure, but I swear it was the warmest February in history. It was so wildly warm. We were getting, you know, high 40s, mid 40s most of the days, and the nights it was barely getting down to the low 20s. Well, now we're getting down into the single digits, and we just got a bunch of snow dumped on us. Strangest thing in the world, we had a blizzard thunderstorm. Now, some of you listening may think, well, I've heard that before, but in my life, I've never had an instance where it's been a blizzard outside dropping like, I think we got like 9 to 10 inches of snow and in the middle of it getting thunder. We had a lot of thunder as a part of it. I thought I was going crazy because the snow was coming down and there was rolling thunder, but it was kind of fun. Now it's all frozen because now we're down into the single digits and everything that came down was wet and slushy. with the thunderstorm, and then now it's all frozen. So fun times. It's now March with winter. I was hoping that we'd get a little bit of an earlier spring, but it was all a lie. I shouldn't have ever expected it. Right now we are just battling the it's gonna sound so funny. We are battling the wild bird population because they have somehow discovered where we put our chicken feed. Now, the dilemma is we can't really put our chicken feed in a completely secure spot for our chickens because then our chickens couldn't even get it, right? I'm talking like little tiny birds that are smaller than the size of my palm. They can fit through chain link fence as well as the lovely magpie population. Now, if you're listening and you like magpies, then I apologize for this, but they are what I like to call the rodents of the sky. Magpies are very frustrating. They will eat anything. They ate our cat food historically. I had to hide our cat food from them because they were ripping into the bag and eating the cat food. Magpies, no thank you. But right now the magpies and those very little teeny birds, every time I go put food in there for the chickens, of course the chickens aren't going to fight for it. The birds are birds, right? They all just probably 30 or 40 little teeny birds fly in, and a handful of magpies will fly in and they'll eat the chicken food with the chickens. So far, we haven't had any decline in egg production that I know of. I mean, we're still getting anywhere from 17 to 25 eggs a day, but it's a little frustrating because the food is not cheap and they're just a bunch of freeloaders. In any case, once again, nothing I can do about it. We're just trying to decide if maybe there is a way that we could at least section off a portion of it. Now, because once again, the chickens are obviously bigger than those little birds and magpies. So they need a space big enough that they can fit through. I tried moving it, but they just found it in about 2 seconds. So that's what we're working with right now, homesteading wise. Other than that, we are now T minus, it's like 3 weeks still. I think I said 3 weeks last podcast, but I was incorrect. It was more like four. We're T minus 3 weeks out from babies being born. The goat babies, I should clarify. No, my wife's baby is not coming out in 4 weeks, hopefully not at least. So that work that's coming up, and I think we're mostly ready. We do need to get a few more supplies. We went through a lot of paper towels last time, and I mean we use actual towels which we wash and reuse, but there's some things that paper towels just need to clean up. We won't go into any details because you probably don't want to hear that. In any case, looking forward to that. Once again, hoping that it goes more smoothly since they have had their supplements. But on the human baby, this is not homestead related, we did have the scan, the 20-week scan of our human baby last week, and everything is looking good, which we're always grateful for. I don't think we have any pre-existing conditions or any concerns necessarily, but it's always heartening to see that everything is growing normally. It's a little funny. They actually did the measurements for our baby and said, your baby's actually measuring bigger than usual, which is unsurprising. Six out of six of our children have been quote unquote large. Our smallest baby was 8 pounds, 9 ounces, smallest baby. And the ultrasound tech said her biggest baby was 9 pounds. So it gives you a little bit of an idea scale wise of our children. And our biggest was 11 pounds. That was our fifth child. Yes, 11 pound baby, believe it or not. Regardless, we were unsurprised to see that this baby is in like the 98th percentile so far at 20 weeks in terms of sizing of all the parts. It's just what it is. In any case, it is a boy. We're very excited that it's a boy. We haven't had a boy baby in 6 years. So my wife is all giddy and wanting to go buy some new boy clothes because what we have is kind of ancient, but we'll still use the stuff that we have are practical enough. But it's always fun to get some new outfits. Let's see. I believe those are all the updates so far for me and my family, so we can go ahead and shift over to the interview portion of the podcast. Hey, Brady, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Another day in the life.
Another day in the life. That is a very apt description of this fine day. I've been really excited to talk to you because I know you've done a lot of really great things with publishing your books. You just published your third book for the series, is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, just
Recently-ish.
published it in December.
Crazy how fast time goes. I'm curious to know, how long have you been writing and publishing?
So I've been writing since I was 11 years old, but and I've probably written six or seven books now, but I didn't publish until 2023 after I kind of decided I wanted to just give it a whirl. TikTok encouraged me.
Okay, so TikTok preceded your publishing intent, or were you hoping to publish and then TikTok just kind of got mixed into it?
Yeah, good question. I was actually, I've always intended to publish, and I've always wanted to be like an author. That's kind of been the goal since I was 11, but just didn't have a whole lot of confidence in some things, right? So there was a lot of confidence issues, I guess. And then I had done some querying with like some older book I had done, and then I was like, yeah, it wasn't really that good. And so I kept writing new books and thinking, okay, this one's better, this one's better. Maybe the next one will be the one I'll publish or something, right? So I kept doing that kind of thing. And then I was taking like a writing course online from David Farland has like a writing course online. He does this thing called Apex Writers. Well, he just passed away last year, but he had this course for that, and I was studying that. And somebody in this like group in that mentioned TikTok. And I had never thought that books on TikTok would be a thing. And so I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess, maybe that's a good reason to check it out. So I hopped in and started making videos, got quite a few followers, would do some good like snippets of my book and stuff like that. And kind of realized like the main thing that scared me about indie publishing was like just the time involved with that. I was like, ah, I don't want to have to like market and do all that stuff. And but then I realized I was doing that already anyway. So I was like, oh, I can just keep doing the same stuff I'm already doing. It's not gonna be like an extra load. So yeah, so then I was just like, cool, well, I guess I can just do it then. So decided to just publish a book I'd already written. It was like yeah, so I just published that book and started writing the next book in the series and just did a whole new thing that way. So that was kind of where I got my encouragement from, basically. Yeah, it helped me overcome the fear of like having to market myself, which I mean, I work as a salesperson, so it's kind of funny to like feel concerned about selling something that I made. But becoming well, I guess, yeah, just getting a social media presence and doing that made me a lot more comfortable with the idea. So yeah, that was a long-winded answer to the question.
Yeah, that's what we're here for, long-winded answers. So no problem there. Feel free to talk as long as you'd like. I do find it a little bit ironic that you are in sales, and you have that apprehension. I mean, I'm not in sales. I very much have that apprehension. I think most authors do. There's something about that. There's like a barrier there in terms of reaching the readers and giving a clear and interesting description of what your books are. It's hilarious how muddled your tongue can get when you just need a short description. But so your series, where did you get the inspiration for it? Was this just something that, an idea that you had when you were in your teenage years, or something that came out of just starting writing a book? Curious to know where that inspiration came from.
Yeah, I have like a good little list of like just book ideas that I keep in my phone in my notes section. I just like have lists of ideas, and I'll usually write things down as like I have character ideas, or I'll have setting ideas, or just like general plot ideas, and I'll just write them all down as like different idea types, I guess. And then as I am kind of like thinking about that, like if I'm like, okay, I want to write a new story, I might go and review them if I'm not already kind of like obsessing over one of these ideas that I have. And just the idea that I wrote down in this case was, I realized like, oh, that's interesting that the moon, like we never see the dark side of the moon, right? That there's always one side of the moon that's always facing us. And I thought that was a weird concept. And so I kind of looked into that a little bit. And it's this thing called tidal locking. So it's where usually the orbital body is usually kind of close to the primary body, right? And it just over time, everything kind of stops spinning as much until the gravity kind of locks at a certain point where you've got kind of like the maximum gravity point from both spheres kind of facing each other, and then they're just stuck like that, right? So as it rotates, they just rotate at the same rate, essentially. And I'm like, that's kind of cool. What if there was a planet like that? So I looked at like planets that might be tidally locked, and apparently they're very common. So it's a super common thing, specifically with like dwarf red stars, because they're bigger stars and they're not as hot, but they often have like a planet that will rotate or that will orbit them that's a little bit closer. And in those cases, they have a tendency to lock more frequently, right? So they're pretty common, and a lot of them could potentially host lice, essentially. And so, anyway, this whole idea like just took me down this whole spin-off of like, oh, that would be a fun place to be, I guess. And so I kind of like, I like to start with like this scientific world approach with it. So that was the initial inspiration, was just like the concept of tidal locking, and then just thinking about, okay, what would a world like that be like? What would the temperate, or like what kind of climate would there be? What kind of animals would survive there? You know, those kind of things. And so I started digging into a lot of the science behind it, and this is like the whole research side to the world building side of things. But I started to dig into that a lot more, and just thought it'd be a lot of fun. Like, honestly, it would be pretty crazy. You have to have like a certain balance between like the amount of water that would be on the planet versus land, and like what kind of things would need to be in the atmosphere, and how close would it need to be to the sun. Like, there's a whole bunch of like random factors like that to think about. And so, and I was like, okay, what would the actual livable portion of the planet be like? And yeah, just found out that this place would be like ravaged by like terrible wind most of the time, right? So I was like, okay, well, there'd be pretty bad wind a lot. You'd have things would evaporate over in the hot area pretty frequently. Even down to like in some extreme cases, like you could have metal that would evaporate, and if it would it was it would literally rain metal on the colder side of the planet, right? So I just things were kind of seemed to be crazy. So I also had to think like, well, how old is the planet? Like, how recently did it lock? And that would influence a lot of things. So yeah. So basically I had to figure out what the planet would require to actually sustain life. And it would need a good balance with the portion of like warm versus cold. You need a lot of water, and there needs to be a lot of air, like wind for circulation, because you'd constantly have, otherwise like all the water would just end up on the frozen side of the planet, and it would just be frozen, and then people would have no water and they would die. So basically you'd have half the planet frozen and half the planet would just be hot, right? So there needs to be wind to kind of like carry things from the cold side back over and stuff like that. I also mixed in like the concept of certain storms happening that would kind of revitalize that a little bit too. So yeah, and I mixed in magic. I was like, how does magic influence how the environment is surviving too? And so yeah, that was kind of like, I guess the root for it was just thinking of this tidally locked planet, where half the planet is stuck facing the sun and the other half of the planet, you know, never sees it. And so you would have pretty drastic, I guess, comparison between both sides of the planet. So people could only live in that small habitable portion of the planet, which I then call the ring. And thus the title of the trilogy is the Ring Dweller Trilogy, because everyone lives within that ring that goes around the planet. So, but that's the initial inspiration, at least for the setting of the world. There were other things for characters and stuff like that, so that's where I started. So, science.
I mean, so it sounds like you should have written a science fiction book off of this concept, or maybe you still are planning on writing a sci-fi book. No. No.
No.
Not anytime
See, there
soon,
actually
Natalie.
are. There actually, yeah, there actually are a few like sci-fi books that do tidal locking is kind of their premise for it.
Cool.
And I think there's even a planet in Star Wars that has tidal locking or something too. So,
It's entirely
yeah, but
possible.
it's fun. Yeah, I like magic. You've got to be able to have these things that are answered by magic, and I just enjoy that concept a lot too. And so, it kind of made me think about what kind of magic would really persist in this world too.
So, question for you, because you understand this phenomenon so well, how do you balance the line between putting in just enough detail for the individual that they can get sucked into the world, but not too much that they're pulled out of it? I mean, it can be such a danger to know so much about something and want to share it, but recognize that your reader's just a reader and they may not care about all of the details. What's that line for you when you were writing?
This is one of my favorite questions because I hate info dumping stuff and I hate like trying to explain all those things too much. And I love stuff to come off a lot more naturally. And so what I do is I'll just take the very personal perspective of the individual that's experiencing the world. And for them, oh yeah, having half the planet over there be super hot and half the planet over there being super cold, that's normal. Right. So I just have them experience it as if it's normal. And oh, they measure time by the moon rising and falling. That's how they measure time, right? And they call it cycles instead of, because there's no day. There's no day or night. So they just call it a cycle. It's a cycle of the moon. Right. So just coming up with like just having to naturally see that, oh, hey, the moon's coming up. Right, they'll just mention that, or like, oh, it's a new cycle or whatever, right? Or, yeah, they're just experiencing naturally, and so I don't really go into the science very much at all, honestly, in the book, because it's not relevant to, the people experiencing the story as much. I really just don't do that, and so I find that comes off a little easier, and then people are more able to just kind of like just start off on page one, more immersed in the story. And obviously, that doesn't work for everybody. Some people maybe do want like a whole bunch of detail that way, but I mean, I guess that's up to each person. But most people tend to think that it flows really, really well with it. And so that's people's favorite part of the series is just the world building, right? They think it's awesome. And so I think the way that I've done that is good, and I want to kind of keep that consistency with everything else I do. So yeah, for me, it's just natural. You don't have to have someone explaining it to somebody who doesn't understand. Like I didn't even bother doing that kind of thing. So it's just a matter of like, yeah, it's just the way it is. So yeah.
It's interesting because I've had lots of conversations with people about world building, and one thing that they say is, they give some prime examples of world building that they really like. But I think, like you said, a lot of people can agree on the there is a too much level where, it's just, you get bogged down by unnecessary details. And I think finding that line is going to be different depending on how complex the story is and how complex the politics and everything that you put in there, but also the age to which you're writing, right? Because world building looks quite different for a middle grade book than it does for, something that's intended for adults, full-fledged adults. So I believe The Ring Dweller falls within YA. Is that correct? That's kind of your
Yeah,
target
well, I mean,
audience.
I'd say it's upper YA, yeah.
Upper YA. Okay, perfect. Yeah. So what things in world building are most important to that target? I mean, keep in mind, anybody listening, you can read whatever. I like reading lower YA. I love reading middle grade books, right? I'm not saying if you're a certain age, you can't read it. But for that target age group, for you, what elements are most important when it comes to building this immersive world?
Yeah, the element that I would refer to is going to be something called wonder, which is the sense of awe that somebody gets when they see something new a lot of the time. So if you see something brand new, it's usually like, whoa, or oh, that's so cool, right? Kind of like that sort of feeling that people should be experiencing that when they're diving into it's like a high fantasy. You should feel like that a lot of the time. Or if you want a really immersive world, you think of something like the Avatar movies, where it's literally a new planet. There's a whole different structure to plants and animals there, right? Things glow at night. It's like, oh, that's super cool. That looks awesome, right? So they kind of convey this cool world visually, right? So we got to try and do that same thing with world building in a textual manner. So what would inspire awe in these senses? What would then create wonder for them? And I think it's just being exposed to something new, right? Oh, this is new. This is interesting. This is unique. This is something I haven't seen before. So I think it's just including some elements of things that people might not have seen before. So that's part of it. And then also to make something truly immersive, it has to be more all-encompassing. One thing that made like Harry Potter super good, right? And that kids loved Harry Potter because it was so immersive. Everything was magic, right? Harry Potter gets on this train and there's a chocolate frog jumping around, right? It's candy, right? You've got newspaper with pictures that move and stuff, right? So it's that kind of concept where like everything is magic, and that's new. That's awesome. Like everything can be unique. So for strong world building to work, I think you just want to come up with like what makes this different? What makes this something that someone would find as a new unique thing? And which can be hard to do in today's age with lots of books out there and lots of movies and all kinds of stuff. But yeah, it's just kind of like exploring that concept of like, yeah, what makes this place different, and what would be unexpected, right? Figure out if there's some kind of unexpected thing that you can do and introduce that. So it should feel like people are transported somewhere else. And one of the other ways to do that, of course, is if you want to transport somebody, then effective writing, obviously, is the way to do that. So info dumping is a really good way to pull somebody out of the world, right? So we talk about this like, oh, we don't want like some weird narrator voice presenting information, and characters should feel realistic and all that stuff. So it boils all the way down to like the writing itself needs to be well done, and characters need to be believable, and the way the world functions should probably be believable, right? So there should be laws and things like that kind of govern the way the world works, just like there is not our world, right? We've got physics and we've got all that stuff. So all those kind of things I think help contribute to it. So to that sense of wonder, so that they're like, wow, I could see that, I could understand how this would work. And so yeah, just that's probably the number one thing I think for me. And then other than that, it's, I guess I mentioned like characters, where there should be somebody that's relatable. And so yeah, having someone that you can connect with and that they have real emotions and all that kind of stuff, those are things that also help immerse people, because that establishes reality a lot better. Because you want someone, especially when you're doing like a completely different world that's not Earth, right? And there's different concepts that, don't exist here, then you need to have people rooted in that somehow. And if they don't believe in your character as being a real person, right, with like real emotions and real flaws, and and they should be dynamic people, right? If you establish real people, then the reader gets to connect with that more on an emotional level. And that makes, I mean, emotions are real. You can experience real emotions while reading and all that stuff, even if it's completely fake, right? So it's being able to do that kind of stuff so that the reader experiences those. So, and that can be accomplished in a million ways, right? But those are some of the things that I think matter the most, is like make it make sense somehow, right? Even if magic is the answer, like explain, they need to know why. There needs to be a why behind that. Or they need people to connect to the characters, and the characters can help them establish, this as being a real place that they can experience emotions in. And so, yeah, having some kind of emotional engagement is always going to be important with that too, as well as creating that immersive world by engaging more than just a sense of, visual, right? Which I think is super common, is that people will just display the world. And just say, yeah, there are trees and they're green, but like, well, what do they smell like, or what did the ground feel like that they walked on, stuff like that. So being able to engage with other stuff too also helps kind of plant them there a little better. But those are the kind of things that I think matter a little bit more when trying to create a unique world, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, you brought into there the senses, and when I'm reading and writing, I love to get a sense of the world from all of this, all the different senses, smells in the air, the feeling of the air, whether or not it's moist or whatnot. I just said a word that people probably won't like. If you hate that word, sorry, I said it. but apparently people don't like the word moist. Regardless, those senses, I think, and the reactions of the characters to the world help the reader get a sense of what's normal versus not normal, which is also very good for, drawing them in, right? Maybe they notice something, they experience something or feel something that's like, oh, it's this way every day and you've just gotten used to it, versus they experience something, smell something, it's like, that's irregular. It can be, it's a way to build the world as a part of what's coming within the story. And I always appreciate those, because it's easier to imagine too, because like you said, you've got this character you're relating to and they're experiencing this world. It's almost impossible not to put yourself in their shoes when you're reading sensual descriptions about everything, right? It's just like, oh, I can almost feel it. I can almost, smell it. By the way, this is described. It just makes it way more engaging and fun rather than the air was humid. It smelled horrible, just like this description, non-reactionary world building. So I agree. I think that does help bring the reader to it. And it's more fun too. So if you don't mind me asking, because you described a lot of really important things. However, are you a plotter or a discovery writer generally when you're putting your books together?
Both. That's
Both.
the thing.
Great.
So I
Yeah, that's
think
awesome.
naturally I'm a discovery writer. Just kind of like I like to figure stuff out as I go. But I have found that if I want a better story, that I need to outline it better. And so I should be able to answer a few core questions before I start. And I think that helps. But again, I think I discover my character a little more as I'm just writing sometimes. So that's kind of important. So a little bit of both, but I usually will map out certain points that are important and then just make sure that I hit those points is kind of where I go and then just carry along from there. Because also I don't like to edit. So I don't like to revise. And so if I can do the best possible in the first draft, that's the important part for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, it's there are some authors that really like to revise. I'm not one of them either. So I agree with that sentiment. But yeah, I mean, obviously everybody writes differently. There's no right or wrong way to write. Everybody is generally on the spectrum between discovery writing and plotting. Just, the way you described certain things working together and characters experiencing the world, it almost felt like you knew how to go to pretty good sense of the way the world would be prior to writing. And maybe I'm incorrect in that. Maybe you didn't know as much until you started writing it. But yeah, I was just curious more than anything. But
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna say like an example is I'm working on like a new series and I'm basing it off of rather than like a scientific idea or whatever with this like a locking, I'm just basing it off of like a few things. It's like, oh, these are my inspiration things. I've got Scandinavian folklore. I'm using like Witcher kind of ideas. I'm using like D&D and taking some inspiration from like Harry Potter type stuff. So I was like, oh, I can take like all of these things and these can help inspire part of that world building. And so part of that for me, like if I want to establish the world, is I'm like, okay, well, how does the naming structure work? How do the cultures work? If I have different nations, like what kind of nation is this? Like where what kind of things are like are part of their culture? And so I do think about all that kind of stuff beforehand. And so I've been drafting a lot of that too. That's why it took me so long. I've been doing this for about 2 months now, as I'm preparing it, and that's more time than you people usually spend between books, right? But yeah, so I've been doing some world building stuff for a little while on that. But I think that's great. I think it's a lot of fun for me because once I can establish something that I could really immerse myself in, then I feel like that the writing comes a lot more naturally. I understand the laws that kind of govern this world and all the different playing parts, I guess. So, but anyway, that's just, again, it comes back to a lot of that. You talk about, I guess I don't want to discover some new rule about the magic, like by book two,
Yeah.
I feel like I should probably know some of that stuff ahead of time, which doesn't always happen. I'll still discover some stuff, but I want to have like a good framework for all of that so I know how everything fits in properly. It just reduces plot holes and things like that might inevitably come up otherwise.
Well, you don't like dealing with plot holes? They're so fun to fill in.
No, yeah, I don't want to do
Definitely.
that.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting the way, I mean, that's why I think it makes sense why a lot of people are. I mean, I've met some pretty heavy plotters before. Pretty incredible the amount of detail some people put into their planning. I'm not that way. But, it's pretty incredible how the brain manages to keep everything ordered and also manages to surprise you with some things, right? You think you understand about something, magic system or the world, and suddenly you're writing and there's a surprise, like, okay, well, there is a new parameter to this situation, this this political situation and or magic system that I was not prepared for. I guess I'm now working with it moving forward. You just have to account for that. So I find that part of the process really fun though. Almost discovering the world as you're writing it, and then it just builds out. It's particularly challenging in series, though. Did you find yourself struggling to keep consistency between the three separate books? Or not so much?
No, actually.
Good.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. In fact, writing the second and third books was so much easier, like just
Good.
a gazillion times easier. And man, I feel kind of, I'm like kind of sad that I like finished the series. I almost just want to like go back and write another book in that world just because like it was so easy to do that. Yeah, because I feel like I already know all the rules and everything like that, so I it's like harder to mess up, and it's like the words go a lot faster, right? So anyway, that's how I feel.
Well, then go back and write another one. No, I actually intentionally
I
ended
will eventually meet, so yeah.
someday when we get through all of our story ideas. Ha ha, joke.
Yeah, right.
There's way too many to write. No, I intentionally left the last book of the Lightbearer Chronicles open to give myself room to write another one because I recognized about midway through the third book that I wasn't quite ready to say goodbye to this, but that arc is done, it's completed. I already have ideas for the next probably trilogy. I don't know when I'll write it, but at some point, I just wanted it to be open so I didn't have to say goodbye to it quite yet.
Right.
So, but that's kind of
That's
the fun
perfect.
thing about being an author. If you don't mind me asking, I'm curious to know around your decisioning around indie publishing, because I know we all go through our different journeys, but where we reach to that point of, all right, I'm going to independently publish this. You mentioned querying agents. Fun process. Very, very fun process. I'm being sarcastic if you can't tell. So what ultimately led to you going the independent route for now, at least?
So just that I can do it myself, I can work my own timelines because I'm still gonna always work a day job, and I don't really want anybody to like force things on me. And I love like the ability to have like just my own flexibility to do whatever I want, basically, right? So that to me has so much value. Like I don't want somebody to tell me like what my cover's gonna look like, or I don't want somebody to tell me like have to like change certain content things or anything like that, or give me different deadlines. Like I want to do that on my own. Like, I don't want to, I don't know. I've got too much of this stuff. I'm not going to be quitting my job anytime soon, you know? So like, yeah, I'd rather work within my own. I wanted to control all that framework, and I like to feel the fruits of my own labors essentially. So like, I can sell my own signed copies. I can do whatever I want. If someone wants a free book, I can send them a free book. Like I can do whatever, right? I think it just allows me a lot of flexibility to pretty much, yeah, just do whatever I want. So it's my own business, and I like the business side of things. So yeah, I don't know. It's it just became more appealing as I like looked into it, as opposed to traditional. So yeah, I like it.
Good, because you're doing it. So I've heard
Yeah.
of a lot of people that they go bounce back and forth between trying both, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you don't know until you give it a go. But a lot of the same reasons why I decided to go the independent route. Also, I would rather be writing books than query letters. Is what I determined relatively
Oh my
quickly.
gosh.
I wrote two query letters, and before I even heard back from them, I was like, I'm not doing this. I'd rather write books. It's just more fun. It's a much more enjoyable experience. And I know where my target is as an independent author. I can hit that target without being dependent on somebody else. So it's just, I like having everything in my control. It's just a much better experience. And I since I decided to independently publish in 2020, I've written, I would say 13 books now. I haven't published that many, but I've written that many. And I know for sure if I had been querying, I would not have written that many. So it's just, it makes way more sense, at least for me. Now, anybody listening who's looking to traditionally publishing, great. I don't have a lot of advice on querying. I do have traditionally published authors join me on the podcast. So yeah, it just depends on what you're looking for. So for you, what has been the most difficult part of writing the books, world building, first of all, and then second of all, what has been the most difficult part of post-publishing? Those are two very different questions. So let's start with the world building in terms of difficulties.
Yeah, just research and making sure things are consistent, because yeah, sometimes people can, I know readers can be critical on things if like some stuff doesn't make sense. So I think it's just important to like wrap some stuff up there, basically. Yeah, like I have another book I've written that I plan on publishing later this year, and the first after like my first couple drafts or whatever, and I had to read it, a lot of the world building was super confusing. So I went back and had to like redo a bunch of stuff and like make it, I had to do the cheater method, I feel like, which is like take somebody from our world and put them in that world, and then so everything's new. So then they experience everything new. And so they can point out like this stuff that's different, or they can try to make sense of things, because the way that I was trying to make it work, like people were just confused. Like they don't have electricity, but they have stuff that works like electricity, kind of. And so like there was just this confusion behind that. So like, yeah, making sure you establish those things and like follow through them well, and have some, make sure that they're explained properly. Like, yeah, that's kind of been like the hard part with that one. So like I'm doing some cleanup, basically. Well, I've already done some cleanup, but like I still have more stuff to kind of fix with that one, as I did a second round here of readers, basically. So that's probably the hardest part there with that, I think, is just making sure that things are consistent and make sense for the reader.
That's why I tried to take a break from my reading, my writing, from a specific story. I'll finish the story and then I'll let it sit for honestly months sometimes while I write something else. By the time I come back to it, I have honestly forgotten most of what the story was like, the world building was like, and come with a fresh perspective. That works for me. May not work for someone else, but yeah, when you have written something else, you kind of forget. What the other book is about.
Yeah.
So it helps to be like, that doesn't make any sense. Now, in terms of post-publishing, what has been the most difficult part of just anything, marketing, selling, organization, after you've published your books?
I think there's an overall consensus among all of us in the authors that marketing is the hard part.
But you like it. You mentioned that
No, I
you're already, oh, I
don't.
thought you liked it. I thought you indicated
No,
that you liked
yeah,
it.
marketing's the hard part. I just, and what I'll say too is like, I didn't have marketing in mind when I wrote the book, right?
Right.
I hadn't even looked into like indie publishing or doing a lot of that stuff. And I hadn't, my writing structure wasn't with marketing in mind, like it is, like I think it kind of is now. And it was before I had written that first book in this series, before I'd taken any writing courses. So I had to go back and like redo some drafts and everything like that. And so, yeah, so marketing this book in particular has been kind of hard, because I was like, I don't know what to market it as, right? And also indie publishing, YA fantasy doesn't do as well with indie publishing as other genres like fantasy. You could just do adult fantasy and it can do better, because you know you're usually, when you're marketing through, yeah, because I guess if you look at it this way, if you look at like Amazon's list of like all the books in the top 100, like 84 of them are traditional published books, right, out of 100. So it's like, okay, well the books that are getting in front of people are literally traditional books, and there's not so much indie. Whereas if you look at romance, I mean, that's all over the board, right? So you can indie
That's true.
publish, I mean, you can make a lot more money doing indie publishing for romance, right? So yeah, so I didn't have some of that stuff in mind. So I think it just takes a little bit of practice, I feel like, to get to the understanding of like, okay, now that I know how to market a book on TikTok or something, then I can engineer a book that's still my same genre. It's still what I love to write, but I can engineer it in a way that's more marketable. And I didn't figure stuff like that out until like, I don't know, literally 2 months ago, when I finished the series and like put it out. And I was trying some different marketing stuff, because I wasn't working on a book. I wasn't doing any revisions. I was just focused on marketing. And yeah, so I was trying to refine some of that. And you know, obviously when a trilogy is complete or a series is complete, you sell better, right? So I think December was my best selling month ever, right? And then January was my next best selling month. And so I don't know, yeah, things like that. But also like figuring out how to do quick pitches But the idea is that you should have a quick pitch in mind before you write the book. Is like, and that's what I'm learning finally, is like, okay, I should know my pitch, and then I can write the book, and I can, based off of that. And yeah, so I'm finding that works a little bit better. So I'm thinking this new series, for instance, I'm working on, the marketing will be a lot easier because I'll already kind of establish what it's going to be. People will anticipate it coming, right? So I think it just builds you up to more success that way. And a lot of times, like, the more success something has initially, the better it does in longevity, I guess, right? So, or in continuity.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I've learned some of those things myself as well. It always is tricky to pre-think what the pitch might be if you're not even quite sure yourself. So that's always the fun thing, but we don't have to get into that. My discovery writing is a bit heavier than a lot of other people's, but once again, we're not here to talk about that. In any case, we are running short on time. I appreciate this conversation. There's so many amazing things that we could deep dive into, particularly around marketing. Because that is a hard nut to crack, to say the least. But before we end here, where can people find more information about you and your books?
Oh, pretty simple. I mean, bradyhunsaker.com, and I put all my stuff on there. For now, I just have a trilogy. I have a couple other books from different series I'm putting out this year, and I mean, you can check me out on TikTok. Everything is just under Brady Hunsaker, so it's literally just at Brady Hunsaker on TikTok, at Brady Hunsaker on Instagram and Facebook, right? So all the stuff's the same that way. And then I do have a Kickstarter that I'm doing. So I'm doing like a special edition omnibus that's coming out. And that's my first time trying Kickstarter, and that's a whole nother beast by itself, right? But that's pretty much it.
And when does your Kickstarter run, if you don't mind me asking?
It's starting probably this Saturday,
30.
actually.
Very good.
Yeah,
And
so it's
30
in
days?
pre-launch stage. It'll be open for about like 18 days, something like that.
Very good. Well, there you go. So, if anybody's listening, don't want to miss out on that opportunity. But yeah, very good. I appreciate you joining me today. I've definitely enjoyed the conversation.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for having me, Dan.
I hope you found that helpful and interesting. Talking to Brady was really enlightening and heartening because it's fun, one, to talk about world building. I always love that topic, but it's fun to hear his perspective on, his scientific approach to his series. It makes me excited to build more worlds, and I hope it gets you excited as well. So next week we are actually talking to Joanna Penn. Yes, Joanna Penn from The Creative Penn. If you've heard her podcast, she has a very big podcast. She's been running it since 2008, but I'm talking to her about tips for the entrepreneur. Oh my goodness, I can't even say the word, entrepreneur-minded author. So we talk a lot about the things that she decisions she made around her business and publishing, as well as the introversion and how to deal with that, as well as being true to yourself. So I think you'll really enjoy that conversation. I know that it was very enlightening for me. So definitely tune in next week. If you'd like to join me for the podcast, just head to thecasualauthor.com, fill out the form there, or of course you can email me at dan@thecasualauthor.com. That will reach me as well. I hope you have a lovely day, and I look forward to talking to you next week.